Hey, welcome back to the seventh episode of Keeping Cozy. I wanted to say thank you before we start to everyone who watched, liked, commented, and subscribed on the John McAfee episode. We did really well. We're probably going to hit 1,000 views very soon, and we hit 100 subscribers, so that's really helpful for a small YouTube channel slash podcast like we have here. Titles are still tenuous or whatever. But yeah, and today we have a really cool guest. Her name is Lauren Simmons. She is the youngest ever New York Stock Exchange trader. And at the age of 25, her age right now, she is hosting her own TV show called The Wolf Ed of Wall Street, a title given to her by Forbes and Harper's Bazaar and a bunch of other like really, you know, big magazines. So today she gives probably the best career advice of anyone we've had on the podcast so far. So definitely stick around. If you're a young person, stick to the second half to watch that. Or if you know someone who's, you know, currently looking for a job or whatever, it's really cool advice, and I recommend sharing this video with them. Thank you guys again for everything. And also, we have social medias now, so check them out below. And thanks again. Thank you so much for being here, Lauren, and for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to get to speak with you and all the students.
Well, our first question for you is going to be related to the financial markets. So you are, you know, in the world of finance. So what are your predictions for the market going forward, given the historic drop and rise, and considering many are saying that there's probably a resurgence of COVID-19 going to happen?
Yeah, so I think the probability of there being COVID resurgence happening is 100% positive. I mean, we are definitely seeing it with cases happening all around America, and and still rising globally. So with that being said, what I predict for the future is that we will be retesting lows. I don't know if it'll be as low as it was in March, but the economy will definitely be reshutting. We definitely see that happening in some parts of Florida and Texas, as well as California. And I think as we get into the fall and the colder months, it is going to be a very interesting time. With that being said, I know the Fed is putting a lot of money, liquidity into the market so that we aren't going to retest the lows. But the reality is the stock market shouldn't be as high as it is currently. And with the economy closing again and so on and so forth, I do see, the market going down again.
I see. So kind of on that topic, how do you see the world of investing and finance changing in the near future, somewhat related to COVID, but then also just in general, with all the different technologies coming?
As it relates to COVID, I think, again, the market, people hopefully will be more conscious on how they go about investing in the market. I know a lot of people have pulled their money out of the market because the market is just all over the place and it's just not making any sense. And so while before the advice was people would typically invest in the ETF, people are now specifically looking at individual stocks and looking at their balance sheets and the health of the company and investing in those stocks. So I think that'll be the case, at least until we find a vaccine where people will pick stocks individually based off of the health of the company. But I think going forward, especially with younger millennials and Gen Zers, we are definitely going to be looking towards ESG investing, which is environmental, social, and governance investing. And those are typically stocks such as Nike, who has their line that is very much primarily in biodegradable products and things like that. And Tesla, which is the leading car within EV technology. So I do see that being a trend going forward and people being very much interested in the ESG component.
Okay. Yeah. No, a lot of stuff there. Thank you so much for your opinions on the market.
If you have any questions, like, please, I want to break it down in layman's terms. So if there was something that you didn't understand, let me know, because I know sometimes I can talk, but I really, you know, want you guys to understand what it is that I'm saying. So if you have any questions, please ask.
Yeah, well, I guess, what are some resources to learn more about ESG investing?
Yeah, so again, you really want to look at what the company is doing, and again, the environmental, social, and governance issues that they have. Tesla, again, is one of the leading EV cars, and they're very much interested in that space. Elon Musk is very adamant about recycling and the environment, and that's kind of why he built and has the innovation all around Tesla. And there are definitely other companies such as Nike, so it definitely is really looking at what the company is doing for, again, the environment, social issues, governance, but they are very much adamant about it. They speak openly about it. You can definitely, if you go to any one of their websites, the things that they're doing for, you know, the world, it will be listed, and they will be very vocal about it. So as far as how does somebody go about looking, definitely just go to the brand's website or go to that company's website. And if it's something that they're very much interested in, it will be highlighted, you know, within their organization.
Cool. So, just to talk a little bit more about your career, how did it feel to be a bit of an accidental trailblazer, given that you were, when you first came to New York City, you had very little interest in finance, but you ended up making history in it?
I wouldn't say accidental, but I do think, you know, I don't believe in coincidences. I don't believe in accidental. But to be able to make history, obviously, is a phenomenal experience, and I'm truly humble and truly grateful just for my time being on the trading floor. But prior to coming to the trading floor, you know, I had a background in genetics and a minor in statistics, and very long story short, was writing my senior thesis and realized we weren't as technologically advanced as I had hoped. But what I did know was that New York was calling me. And I know it's very cliche, especially here in America, where after you graduate college, typically people want to move to LA or New York. I had to visit New York the semester before I graduated college, and there was something that this intuition, I'm very much a person that goes on my intuition and goes on a gut feeling. I was very much connected to being in New York. Didn't really know the reasons why, but through the process of networking and meeting different people, I landed the job at the New York Stock Exchange. And any opportunity that I say yes to, I put my all in. I don't, you know, do things, you know, I put everything into it. And so when the opportunity was given to me to be on the trading floor, I said, I'm going to be the best person that I could be within this role and give my all and learn as much as I could. So I'm so grateful for the opportunity, and I'm so grateful for what came out of it.
So kind of staying on that that topic of finance, the world of finance does come across as very intimidating, like the Wolf of Wall Street kind of, vibe. How prevalent is that culture still? And what are ways that men or people in general who want to be potential allies can help make these spaces more inclusive for young people, women, and people of color?
It's very interesting because, yes, Wolf of Wall Street, you definitely have alpha men out there. And I think that's going to be in any organization, especially where it's dominated by men. But I will say that even to this day, all of my mentors are men. And if anybody, you know, was actively out there trying to make an alliance with me, it was the men, and still to this day, men, you know, in a place, you know, wanting to go above and beyond to support me in my career. And so I think Wall Street sometimes does get a good, you know, there's a negative association that if you are anybody who is other in those spaces, you won't be supported. But obviously, if you are able to find people that are going to go and beyond and move mountains for you, they will do just that. And so I, again, just very grateful to have had a job directly out of college, and the men to gather and support me and to really be invested in, you know, my future. They went above and beyond. So I would say, don't get discouraged. There is power in being, you know, kind of the one other person in the room. And while they should make an alliance with you, you should also be an advocate for yourself, because if you're not fighting for you, who else will?
So kind of on the topic of the Wolf of Wall Street, you've been called oftentimes by like major publishers the Wolfette of Wall Street. How do you respond to that specific term?
Oh, I think it's cute. and not to downplay it, I think it's a wonderful title to have, and you know, I think it's awesome, and I think it's absolutely relevant.
Yeah. So, well, you know, that's the name of your podcast, and you also have a TV show named Making Money Moves. And I just wanted to ask, those are also very white male dominated arenas. Have you found the challenges that came about with that to be similar or different towards being a broker? And could you tell us a little bit more about those projects you're working on?
Of course. I think what I want people to really understand is if you walk into a space, if you walk into anywhere, whether it's job, a social setting, et cetera, and you focus on what makes you different, oftentimes that can be a crutch that can not be beneficial in any way. And so when, you know, working on the trading floor, even working, you know, in film and TV where it's predominantly white, I don't necessarily, yes, I know I'm a woman of color, absolutely, and I love being that, and I've been that all my life, but it's not necessarily anything that I focus on. My major focus is being great within my role, and I think that's way more impactful than being tall, short, fat, skinny, purple, green, etc. And with that being said, obviously there are going to be some overlaps with being in male-dominated spaces. But again, the priority is not what is the external. It is how well I can be in that role, if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, totally. I guess maybe one thing I'd want to push a little bit on is, you know, there's this whole entire idea of intersectionality, which is talked a lot about in, you know, in colleges. Do you feel as though there's a bit of like, you know, different kinds of things that you get, maybe because in some situations you're the only person of color or some situations you're the only female. How would you say that there's any like difference between the two? Do you feel anything related to, I guess, the intersection, your personal intersectionality in predominantly white spaces?
Do I get anything more? I mean, obviously, one of the best advice that I was given to by Richard Rosenblatt of Rosenblatt Securities on the trading floor was, when you walk into a space, you are going to be the only Black woman in the room, facts. So what are you going to do with that? And he meant that in the sense of, don't get timid, don't get scared. People are going to be curious, right? Because you are this person who doesn't look like any of them. And just based off of that alone, when someone comes up to you, you make sure you have something to say. And people can interpret that however you want, but for me, I took that as, okay, the attention is gonna be on me regardless. So let me make sure I blow these people away in all scenarios. So that kind of answers that, but I know that there is, you know, another side of that as far as like, okay, she's a woman of color. Could it be a tokenism thing? I, you know, not a fan of tokenism or even that word. I think, you know, if you're given the opportunity to be there, it's not just to show face. And if it is for that organization, which would be really unfortunate, you have the power to not just be a face. You have the power to put your all into it and again, be great within your role. So, yeah, there definitely can be that component of it of being, you know, the other in the role and what that means, but you get to interpret what that means for yourself. And for me, I never just want to be something just to be the face of something. I definitely want to put my whole heart into it.
Yeah, I think that's actually a perfect segue to our second half of the podcast, which is on career advice. Which is specifically, you know, you've started to get a lot more attention to the work that you do with a movie coming out about you, a TV show that you host, and a podcast. Does that stuff ever get overwhelming? And what are some ways that you de-stress?
No, time management is your best friend. I wholeheartedly love all the projects that I'm on. I'm very passionate about what I do, essentially creating a space for younger millennials and Gen Zers around financial wellness, which, let's be frank, finance is not a sexy topic and people love to not talk about it. And I want these conversations to continue going. We see big organizations or big networks such as CNBC or even, an older generation such as Susie Orman and Jim Cramer becoming these personal finance gurus, but typically they only target, an older audience and typically white. And I love being, my generation's person to be able to have these conversations and to empower people around finances. And so while this is definitely an avenue that hasn't been tapped as much, I love navigating it. I love, essentially building out a platform that hasn't been touched and kind of building upon that. It's wonderful. And so yes, I have many, many different projects, very grateful for all of them. And how I go about de-stressing. I love hiking. I love working out. I meditate every single day. And I make sure that I set aside a couple hours each morning and night to do just that.
Very, very cool. So on the subject of finance, given that it's like kind of got the reputation that we alluded to in the past few questions, and you have the tech world, which has been known for embracing different kinds of people and their make work fun attitude, what is your pitch for why students should consider finance, given the hours, stress, and just all the different, kind of baggage that's kind of come onto it?
Well, I think again, finance is the root of any organization. And so with that alone, there is so much power with that. And it doesn't have to be stale and old. I love what younger millennials and Gen Zers are doing in the sense of, with these big Wall Street companies, if they, aren't allowing them in due to, their background or so on and so forth, they are creating their own financial firms. I've seen that happen so much, and it being young and diverse and inclusive. And so I love that. I don't want people to get jaded by finance and what it typically is associated with, because there is so much power there and so much relevancy that is going to always be important, always.
So what are some tips you'd give to college students who are considering entering finance, or just some financial tips? 'Cause you recently just transitioned out of college, despite all of the different things you've done. You are only 25 years old. So are there any key financial tips that you've personally learned?
Key financial tips. Well, one of the things that I learned on the trading floor is that most men on the trading floor don't invest in the market, and their theory is you can't beat the market. But my theory is you can't play the game if you're not in the game. But definitely have the tools and the resources to make very educated responses on how you're going to invest in the market. I want you guys, we are in an era of having everything accessible instantaneously. And so thoroughly doing your research when you're trying to invest in the market or if you're trying to do any long-term investments in general. As far as just regular career advice, I think overall, I definitely want to push on the point of you're going to have two different mindsets. You're going to have an older mindset where everything is very much black and white and linear. You need to have A, B, C, D, E, F, G in order to do this job and in order to further develop your career and so on and so forth. I and like most younger millennials and Gen Zers, and especially Gen Zer, because they are the age where they are going to be the largest demographic of entrepreneurs. So you guys completely understand that you don't need a gatekeeper to make your reality a dream. So with all that being said, a very long response, think outside the box. You don't need to have had the background to be able to apply for the job. Your best friend is going to be the power of networking. If you meet somebody who, is wants the best for you and again is in a position to move mountains, they will create a job for you within your organization or will connect you with somebody or will go above and beyond to help further your career. And I've seen that happen time and time again. And, you know, with the degrees such as wood cutting, and then I've seen, you know, people grow into being VP of a financial firm or even a tech firm or so on and so forth. And so I say, forget, not forget, obviously, like you go to college, you get your degree, but I wouldn't put so much focus on all the courses that you're taking. Plus, a lot of the times, many of the roles that you're in, outside of, you know, probably being a doctor, a lawyer, and other very, very traditional roles, they will, the organization will teach you the skills that you need in order to be successful within that job. As with me, I didn't have a finance background. I had to take the Series 19, which had an 80% fail rate. They gave me this very, very large textbook. And that was it. And I read that book cover to cover and passed that test and had blown many people away. And then after that they took me under the wing and I learned how to be an equity trader. So I just say, be open to opportunities and definitely start building out your network group and realizing that that is something that is going to get you a lot more further.
Yeah, no, that actually is a perfect segue for our next question, where it's, you know, you got your job at Rosenblatt through networking and through the LinkedIn grind. What are some networking and hustle tips that you'd give for college students who are entering, you know, the COVID-19 career world?
Yeah, so, you know, my mom, she works for a Fortune 50 company and she's senior HR manager in Georgia. So I always knew that for one job posting that they would get within their organization, they would get anywhere between 6,000 to 7,000 applicants. So how do you stand out? It's not going to be just putting in your resume. It is going to be knowing somebody and building those relationships. And so with the time of COVID is very much similar, you know, in any other time, you're just not exactly meeting people in person, but you are having a lot more Zoom conversations, which makes it so much more convenient. And so what I say to people, when you are scouting on LinkedIn on who you're trying to connect with, again, unless you are very adamant about what you want to do, then obviously look for people within that space. But I say the more you're open, the more opportunities will come your way. So when you go on LinkedIn, look for people who are, you know, in senior HR recruiting roles, look for people who are in C-suite levels. You want to look for anybody that, you know, is C-suite and above. Don't look for people who are entry level. They are not going to be able to help you, unfortunately, because they don't have as much pull. And ask to have a, you know, 15 to 20 minute Zoom session. And specifically, while you're in these meetings, do not ask for a job. It is, you know, kind of unsexy. But what I would ask is how they got to where they're at. People love talking about themselves. And what I tell people, it is almost as equivalent as going on a first date and asking someone to marry you. That is that same mindset. You want to be able to talk to people. You want to be able to connect with them. And if they have a connection with you and vice versa, and they want to follow up, again, they will, and I keep using the metaphor, move mountains, but I've seen it happen. They will move mountains to be able to help you. They will be the one to do the follow-up and say, hey, like, what is it that I can do to help you? I think, you know, not knowing somebody and having a Zoom meeting with them for 15 minutes or even an in-person meeting, and then immediately saying, okay, can you, you know, help me with finding a job? It comes off a little crazy. So I want people to be mindful about that. Make sure that you are targeting the right people and going from there.
Yeah, no, perfect. So to conclude, we have one more question. The founder of Girls Who Code said in her TED Talk that women are encouraged to focus on perfection over bravery. She continues to say that research has shown that perfectionism often leads to self-defeating thoughts and behaviors, causing women to miss opportunities to be something like a New York Stock Exchange bond trader or broker, or to take part in a finance-related TV show. So I guess, How would you react to that statement? And how can girls in general, but people in overall, find bravery?
It's very accurate. It's very on point. We see it happen all the time. There have been studies, or even within, like, my mom working within HR, right? There will be a job posting, and the criteria will be A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and 10 years experience of this, and 5 years of doing this, and so on and so forth, right? And oftentimes, what you'll see is women will say, "Oh, I don't have A, but I have B through F, and so I won't apply." And you see men only having A and saying, "Hey, I'm still gonna apply." So for women, or just people in general, get out of your head, be open to opportunities. You don't need everything that is, on that list. And again, above all, networking, having confidence with yourself, within yourself, and being able to market yourself. If you can't market yourself, who is going to be able, no one else is going to be able to do it. So I think the most important thing above all is having that confidence and being able to captivate people so that you are able to, not miss out on opportunities.
Yeah, no, thank you for your time. The one thing I'd also want to ask is, could you perhaps talk a little bit about your two programs that you're working on?
Yes, so I am so excited. I have created a podcast with Best Case Studios, and I love the team over there. And the podcast is a new personal finance show geared towards millennials and Gen Zers. And I talk about the stock market and how to invest and how to raise your credit, just overall financial wellness, and making it easily digestible and relatable to us, so that you guys are empowered and you have the tools to make great financial decisions. So that's the podcast. Super excited about that. And as well as Making Money Moves with AGC Studios, which is a new TV series that is coming out. And we are taking extreme cases of people in their early 20s who make poor decision-making moves, such as buying 10 pair of Yeezys instead of paying their rent. And we really lock down on the why people get so enamored of these bad spending habits, and being the Marie Kondo of finance. So I'm super excited about these two projects, and I really can't wait for you guys to see them all.